On a very cold and snowy Wednesday afternoon in January, I was invited to Milwaukee's famous Eddie Martini's restaurant for a trade tasting and luncheon featuring Migration winemaker Neil Bernardi. Neil is a young winemaker with extensive experience and deep passion for the business. At one point, I mentioned that I felt we had met before since he reminded me so much of many winemakers I've met in the past. Migration is in the Duckhorn family of wine labels, focusing primarily on Chardonnay and Pinot Noir. I was able to talk with Neil just before the tasting began, so in the background you'll hear the restaurant staff getting ready to handle the regular lunch rush, as well as the tasting. Well, we're here in Milwaukee at Eddie Martini's restaurant with Neil Bernardi of Migration Wines. How are you doing?
I'm doing great, Ray. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here. And yeah. you were just saying a moment ago this is your first time here in Milwaukee, so you got a nice, sunny, warm, clear day.
Yeah, yeah.
Except absolutely. For that stuff out there behind you.
Well, I was bemoaning, you know, in California, where we're always, talking about the weather, especially in farming. We were talking about how, tough weather conditions that had dropped to 55 degrees, abominable,
Your first time here in Milwaukee, are you traveling throughout the country right now, or are you just going through the Midwest?
Well, we are. I started in Chicago, and then this is a second day, and it's really kind of talking about some of the new wines that we're releasing. Actually, it's really exciting because Migration is, we after many years of doing trials and research on, actually, this is our ninth vintage. Our first one that we bottled in our 30-plus year history as a company was in 2008 of Chardonnay. And so, kind of following in the tradition of Duckhorn, being innovative, always looking for new frontiers, and Migration is becoming the new evolution, the next evolution of Duckhorn Wine Company, in the same that Paradox was in 1994, which is, I love the wines. Dave Marchese does an incredible job. And those wines are Zinfandel-based blends from the Napa Valley. So really innovative, exciting, kind of a different take on Napa Valley and Zinfandel in particular. And then 1996, Dan and Margaret's passion for Pinot Noir, they scoured the coast of California looking for the spot, the upcoming spot for Pinot Noir, they had such great vision to put their flag down in the Anderson Valley and really invest in some great estate land and start making really high quality Pinot Noirs at Goldeneye Winery. And so this, making Chardonnay and Pinot Noir from the Russian River area, which Migration has been doing and will continue to do, is, kind of the next part of that tradition of innovation, and it's exciting to be part of, especially as a young winemaker, to have the opportunity to work with some of the vineyards I'm working with, and to have the Duckhorn's resources to make the absolute best wine possible is like a dream.
And you got a great team with Bill Nancaro and David Marchese.
Yep.
Do you have a lot of contact with them as the time goes by?
Yeah, it's great. I mean, it's a really collegial atmosphere. I mean, and Zach Rasmussen too at Goldeneye. We're all very focused on our own roles. I mean, the fact that as a company we have four different winemakers says a lot about, our focus on really maintaining that focus on quality and specifically dealing with the wines that we're, experts in. So, Zach is an incredible winemaker of Pinot Noir in the Anderson Valley. And so we all, of course, as winemakers, we always trade tips and talk about, what we're all doing and how we can help each other. It's cool. It's fun. It's like, you're right. It's like being part of a big team.
The attitude has got to be very frank about what they tell you and what you tell them.
Oh,
and
yeah.
You taste, because there's no kidding each other. You're winemakers. You
right.
know what you're doing.
Absolutely. And that level of honesty is, a prerequisite to being part of that team. I think we all, owe it to each other and have to be honest, because, ultimately they're the people who know all the little details that may go into making wine what it is, and can give you a very frank assessment of how you're doing or not doing.
Yeah, very frank.
Yeah.
I'm sure. Physically, is there a winery Migration operates out of, are you sharing space?
Not currently. We're sharing space with Goldeneye. We just built this beautiful LEED Gold certified, incredibly sustainable building up in the Anderson Valley, where we're making both Migration and Goldeneye. And that I would love to talk about that LEED certification for hours, but I think in short, it's the certification process that basically rates how sustainable your building is. And for a winery, which is inherently a fairly energy intensive process, to be LEED certified is significant. So Zach did an incredible job designing it, getting it certified, the whole thing. So yeah, so for now we're making our wines up there from the make our Pinot Noir from Anderson Valley and Russian River Chardonnay.
So Anderson Valley, I think everybody hears that name often, but of course a lot of visitors to California are going to be going to, you know, Santa Barbara, to Napa, to Sonoma. I don't know how often people get up to that area. So tell me about what it's like, what the terroir is like, what the mountain range is like.
Right. Well, most people fly into San Francisco or you know, drive north up into, it's Mendocino County. It's above Sonoma County and above Napa County, north rather, above.
So yeah. It's about 3 to 4 hours from San Francisco?
Depending on who's driving, yeah, it could be 3 to 4. That's it, yeah. And so you're going north on the corridor through this, you know, through Sonoma County wine country, and you eventually kind of find yourself farther and farther in the hinterlands and eventually get on Highway 128, which is also known as Germamine Drive. I drive it frequently, so it's incredibly windy, but it's incredibly beautiful, bucolic, and eventually you wind your way through. It takes about 45 minutes on this really windy, small, two-lane highway, and find yourself in the Anderson Valley, which, you know, it's a lot to, there's so much to say about the Anderson Valley. I lived there for 2.5 years with my wife, she so patiently moved up there with me, you know, shed our earthly connections and went and lived out in the Anderson Valley, and it ended up being one of the best experiences that we could have. I mean, beyond terroir, it has an incredible small town feel. You know, everybody knows each other. On top of that, which is significant, there's a real move towards really embracing local foods and embracing local wines. So many people are familiar with the Anderson Valley Brewing Company, which is based out of Anderson Valley, have a beautiful facility there. There's a bunch of wineries. One of the oldest in the valley was Navarro. GoldenEye was created in 1996, like I was mentioning before, because it was one of those places that just had some of the most incredible Pinot Noirs coming out of it. Very, you know, under the radar at the time. Very, very under the radar at the time. But in terms of its terroir, it's very cool, you know, and Zach always likes to put the wines in there, in terms of their character, somewhere between, as they are, you know, geographically, somewhere between Oregon and the Russian River. So they have structure, they have potency, they have elegance and delineation, but at the same time have a density and opulence that oftentimes Russian River can show too. So it's one of the few transverse valleys in California, meaning it runs perpendicular to the coast. What's neat about that, Duckhorn has developed multiple estates. We currently have 5 estates with about 220 acres of vineyard in the valley. It's interesting because the fog effect, as it does most of the coast of California, the fog on a daily basis flows in and out, cooling the region. So what you get is that the closer to the ocean you are, the more fog effect you get. And because our vineyards are placed in relatively even distances from the deep end, which is the, you know, the valley's name for as far towards Navarro, towards where the ocean is, towards Boonville, which is, you know, farther away from the ocean, you get this incredible diversity based on the climate, and you get this very different wine profile farther away from the ocean than you do closer to the ocean. So climatically, it's incredibly diverse, and over the span of the valley gives really different wine profiles. In addition, because of the geological origins of the valley, there's quite a diversity of soils. You have gravels down by the riverbed, by the riverbank, and then a little bit farther up on, it's a fairly sharp river cut valley. So it's not the wide plantable portion in the middle is not very wide at all. So it's either slopes or riverside, basically.
Kind of like Santa Rita, how the mountains cut in completely differently. That's the same
exactly.
Geographical...
Right.
So you have this totally different flow of fog coming in.
Right, absolutely. And that, it's a huge effect. And then on top of that, our clones, which we have an incredible array of clone to rootstock combinations, the different sites and aspects, and the way we've planted our vineyards is we've broken up to many small pieces so that we can really pay attention to the nuances of each particular site. And then that transfers into the winery. Our main fermenter size is about 3 tons, which is really small, but it allows us to really make everything separately, from block to block, different clones, different places, everything else. Ferment it separately, barrel it separately, and then at the blending table, have that many more options with which to craft, our blends.
That makes it kind of a, you know, kind of a candy shop.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a winemaking dream. I mean, and it's Pinot Noir anyway, so it's, you know, it's bound to be diverse. It's bound to be, you know, that your palate is so broad to begin with. To add, you know, to be able to capture all the complexity of the sites is, yeah, like I said, it's pretty cool.
And obviously the influence is European. It's all world, right?
Well, you know, I mean, Burgundy is certainly, I think, you know, for Pinot Noir and Chardonnay, it is the from whence we gain inspiration, you know. But that being said, we're not, you know, in the same way that Burgundy tries to make Burgundian wines, we're trying to make wines that represent the Anderson Valley and in Russian River, specifically with the Chardonnay. I think it's a fascinating to look into the evolution of terroir over time, and to think about, you know, how the old world has developed over time, and they've, you know, the market forces and organic forces have, you know, caused certain vines to be planted in certain places. We're undergoing that process as well right now. I mean, it appears as if we've been here forever. You know, California's been a winemaking region for such a long time, but in comparison, we're just infants in this game, but progressing very quickly. I mean, as an example, Chardonnay in the state of California, in 1960, there were only 150 acres planted, and that's according to the Foundation Plant Services, part of UC Davis. They can track the history of clones and stuff. So 1960, 150 acres planted. In 2003, there was 100,000 acres planted. So just in that short span of time from 1960 to 2003, what we now consider as, you know, the queen of the you know, it's the number one in terms of volume, and potentially, I think it's revenue, maybe less so, but, you know, it's one of the most highly planted varietals in California. So, I mean, that evolution, that we're undergoing that very quickly.
I think that could be another name for the state of California's evolution when you get right down to it, especially for the wine industry.
Yeah.
So much discovery, so much change.
Yeah.
Let's talk about you a bit. You spent some time in Europe, but you weren't necessarily making wine at that time.
No,
you were just
sort of
enjoying it.
Yeah, well, interesting. I have an Italian-American family, and I grew up in Northern California, and the focus was always, they were, you know, very poor background, you know, came in the early, you know, 20th century to because they were very poor, but wine was an important part of daily life, you know, as it is in much of Italy, but it wasn't the focus. You know, food was always the focus. And when I went to college, you know, it was out of sheer luck that I went to UC Davis and actually didn't declare winemaking originally. I was studying Italian, and I eventually got a degree in Italian, but while I was there, the first year, I happened to meet Jim Wolpert, who at the time was the chair of the department. You know, he's been in the business, in the research of winemaking and viticulture and oenology in California for a long time. Ended up just by chance meeting him, said, "Hey, we ever thought about, you know, studying this?" And it sounded pretty cool. So, you know, so long story short, you know, my head filled with visions of, you know, travel and faraway lands and speaking, you know, languages and enjoying the good life, you know, embarked down that path, graduated with the degree. But yeah, I traveled around in Italy for a while, lived there, studied in Perugia and Florence, and worked. It's kind of the way the wine industry works for young college graduates or not. It's a really apprentice-based trade. You know, you put a lot of time in working with different people, learning the craft from different people who know, you know, what they're doing, different places to see how different people do things. So I did mine. I worked at Gunlach Bunchu for harvest in Sonoma County. I worked at Quintessa. I did a tour in New Zealand where I, interestingly, met my wife, who was from Sacramento, long story short. But
what are the odds?
Yeah, what are the odds? Mm-hmm. Eventually found my way to the Anderson Valley.
New Zealand, tell me about your experience down there. And I know what you're talking about in terms of the internship, because I've seen that in wineries that I've visited.
Right.
So what was it like for you when you went down there? Obviously, totally different.
Oh, my gosh. It's such an incredible country. I mean, I could go on for hours about, you know, the people, the place. I mean, it's an incredibly beautiful country. I mean, culturally, the people, I mean, but ecologically, geographically, it's incredible, you know, and an outdoor person's dream. I worked for Kim Crawford in Marlboro, but I, again, at that time, you know, I was a fairly young chap, and, you know, travel was I was working, right? I mean, so I had an excuse to go, but it was, I wanted to travel the country, so I bought a car and having met my wife the third day, you know, ended up traveling around with her.
The
and
third day, no
yeah,
less.
Yeah,
wow.
yeah, exactly. So we you know, traveled around in our car, experiencing the local, you know, sights and sounds and flavors and everything else. And but I can't say enough about the place and it. And New Zealand is a developing wine region. I actually had the absolute pleasure later of being a consultant for Ted Lemon. I worked at Literai Wines for 2.5 years, and at the time he was consulting for a winery down in central Otago. So I was able to go 3 successive vintages as a consultant, more or less, to develop a winery down there, develop the winery itself, the vineyard. And
what year was that?
That was the vintages of 2008 and 2009.
Okay, I just wanted to get
right
get a place for us in terms of
right.
So, overall, then, how long have you been making wine?
Well, if you consider from my first internship at 19 years old, 11 years. In terms of the potential for winemaking there, I mean, obviously Sauvignon Blanc, they have their own style. It's beautiful. It is what it is. I mean, it's New Zealand style Sauvignon Blanc, so I love it. It's wonderful, refreshing, crisp, you know, everything you can say about it. But I think that Pinot Noir has a real, and some of the aromatic white varietals have incredible potential, especially in central Otago, where some of the best practitioners of winemaking in New Zealand are focusing their efforts. So I'm excited to kind of watch the progress.
Did you find making that transition coming from that part of the world back to the United States, was it difficult, or was it, if anything, you're able to pull so much from that experience?
Oh, it was invaluable. I mean, it was such a it was so different from, well, I mean, university is its own particular. I mean, what you learn in university is significantly different from what you learn as an apprentice actually making wine. And when I say actually making wine, I mean doing the day-to-day stuff, you know, pumping tank from tank to tank, you know, driving a forklift, you know, adding yeast or not adding yeast. I mean, all the things that various winemakers do to make their wines. I mean, that's very different from, you know, plotting statistical analysis of, you know, consumer, you know, whatever. I mean, whatever you do in university on a daily basis. So that was fun, you know, from a practical, hands-on perspective. I'm a very hands-on guy, and that was great. But it was great because of the, like you mentioned, some of the interns were, you know, one gentleman was one kid was his family owned a chateau in Bordeaux, and he was there, you know, putting his time in before he had to go and take over the reins of his. And then there were other guys and girls who were like me, you know, relative neophytes to the industry, but also, you know, were very interested, committed to spending their time at very little pay and, you know, a lot of hours to live the dream, you know, and to eventually make wine. So it was great. And when I came back, my future wife and I moved to Napa, and I got a job at Quintessa, where I did, you know, another 7 month, I think it was 7 month kind of extended internship, which was incredibly, totally different. I mean, couldn't have been more on the opposite end of the spectrum. Napa Valley, you know, high-end, you know, Meritage blend. So that was incredibly good as well. And I think the more sides you see of this business, probably like most businesses, the better, you know, so you can understand where you're coming from, where you want to go. And
well, wouldn't you agree in a way that it doesn't matter if you're in California or even what part of California is, winemaking's international no matter what.
Right, right.
Especially absolutely. Now with so many countries, so many states in the U.S., obviously right. 50 states making wine, growing
right.
wine, that kind of
right.
thing.
Right, right.
You meet people from everywhere.
Yeah.
That are in the business.
Yeah, and it's a small business, like you said before. You know, and the thing is too, is that what's incredible about wine, I mean, this is so trite to say, but what's so incredible about wine is that every place makes such incredible varieties, and the differences from place to place are, you know, have unending interest to me, and I think most connoisseurs. You know, it's just, and to be able to go and see the place and to see the people who do it, it just adds flavor to the. To the cerebral experience of making wine.
Sure, and that's part of what we're trying to do here. They don't actually get to see you, but they get to hear
yeah.
how your passion comes out
yeah.
when you talk about this.
Well, it's just great. So it's so interesting. You know?
Yeah.
I mean, but yeah, but you know, eventually my passion ran towards Pinot Noir and Chardonnay, because those wines, I like those wines best. Those are the wines that I kept coming to over and over again, and you know, from a crafting perspective, I feel like they give so much. You can. There's so much variety there.
Sure.
You know, Pinot Noir has such an incredibly diverse palette. You know, from clone to rootstock to site to whatever. I mean, you can paint so many pictures, and they can all be beautiful. So that's fun.
That's great to hear you say
that's
that.
That's an all cool.
Every winemaker I talk to, I ask the same question to, and it's always curious to hear the answers.
Yeah, I'm excited to hear what it is.
Corks versus caps.
Oh.
Especially because you spent time in New Zealand.
Yeah,
and
right.
And we were talking Sauvignon Blanc.
Right. You know, I could probably spout, you know, some scientific data about aging and whatever else, but I think from a production standpoint, I think they're both valid. I think they're both great. I mean, obviously, cork taint is an issue. You know, you never want your wine to be, you know, not out of your own fault. I mean, you want it to be your fault if it's bad.
You don't want it, like that.
Yeah, right. I mean, you don't want it to be because of the packaging. I mean, I don't know. There's something to me about the tradition of opening a bottle of wine, taking the cork out. I mean, the sound, the process, you kind of step into that wine space, you know? And so for me, I like a cork. That being said, there's so many reasons why caps are, you know, getting, and more as the technology improves, you know, becoming attractive options.
Okay, that's a good answer. Very concise one, too. I appreciate that.
Is it? Oh.
But
it,
the passion about that alone is fascinating.
Yeah.
Because we've also talked about the glass stoppers, the corks.
I wanted to learn more about those. I've seen those, and that seems pretty interesting, too.
A lot of us who love wine, of course, are very specific about what our stemware that we use to drink our wine.
Yeah.
And I'm seeing more of the Bordeaux-style glass with the tulip design on it,
mm-hmm.
which I'm seeing.
With the curved lip?
With the curved lip. I don't know if that's officially called the tulip design.
I think it should be. It's eloquent.
I seem to me I've seen that before. So do you have any feelings about that yourself? I mean, when you drink it?
Yeah. Well, glassware is critically important. I mean, interestingly, when we taste on a professional basis, when we're blending, it's really important for us to maintain consistency in that glassware. I'm kind of an aside from how glassware affects different wines. So in my mind, absolutely they do. I mean, of course they do. When we blend, we have to maintain consistency in our glassware that we use because of that difference. Because, you know, you'll smell one wine out of a tulip-shaped glass, get a totally different effect than you would out of a skinnier closed-top glass. So, yes, absolutely, it's important. I personally like tasting out of the bowl, you know, the globe, because I feel like you can really create a lot of aroma, you know, you can release a lot of aromas in that bowl without concentrate them, and it makes our job easier, you know, appreciating them and getting as much as we can out of them.
It's part of the whole experience.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Is there a plan in the future? You were talking about the Golden Eye, the new space they built. Now, if I remember correctly, tell me if I'm wrong, they had a smaller taste room, kind of a wooden-ish building.
They do. Yeah, it's an old homestead, yeah, that was on one of the first properties that we developed up there.
So is there a plan for migration to have a tasting room at all?
You know, at this point, we're looking at it in terms of Russian. We want to make sure it's the right, you know, it took us 8 years to create the wine, so
we
obviously, yeah, exactly. We take our time, but yeah, I think eventually, I mean, we want to be part of the Russian River and community and Sonoma County community. I live in Sebastopol, so you know, for me, it's the closer we can get to being part of that community, the better. So yeah, I think eventually, long term, but short term, we're really happy with the incredible winery we're working out of now. And
that still has to be a bit of a commute for you, then. If I did it every day, I'd probably lose my mind.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Lots of NPR, lots of books on tape.
Yeah.
But you know what's nice is that I don't go up there every day. What I do is I spend a lot of my time working with the growers in the Russian River area, specifically on the Chardonnay that we're growing and Pinot Noir that we'll be growing there. So, you know, maintaining our standards of, you know, our partnership with our growers to make sure that they're doing the right stuff and pruning the way we want and, you know, all that kind of stuff. So I do spend quite a bit of my time working on the vineyards and not having to drive so far.
Yeah, that's a good thing.
Yeah, yeah.
I've seen migration around. It seems to be fairly well distributed, if I'm not mistaken,
yeah.
In the country.
Yeah.
Is there a wine club for migration at all?
There is, absolutely. If you go to duckhorn.com, www.duckhorn.com, there's a or www.migrationwine.com. There's a site there that you can sign up and become a club member. It's exciting because we're also, in addition to our Russian River blend, we're exploring other appellations across the West Coast of the United States and really singling out some really compelling vineyards to make single vineyard wines out of that really explore the terroir of that place. So, for example, in 2009, We did a Santa Maria single vineyard wine, which is so strikingly different from Russian River. And you really can see, I mean, I make them in the same way, intentionally to show off that terroir. We did an Anderson Valley, a split rail vineyard from the Anderson Valley, which is really interesting, textural. Again, totally different and shows a different side of what Chardonnay and what the site can be. So, but we made only, you know, tiny amounts. You know, for example, the Dierberg vineyard in Santa Maria, we made 96 cases. So it's not the kind of thing we can distribute, you know, pretty widely. So if, club members definitely get the pick of the litter on those.
Ever since Duck Home was sold, there really has been a lot of exciting changes right on through the whole line with Migration, with Paradox, and with Duckhorn itself. A lot to look forward to in the future, wouldn't you say?
Absolutely. I think it's totally exciting. I mean, it's been a company, you know, while we've been around for a long time, since 1976, we have a real history of innovating and really, you know, honing our craft and trying to improve always, you know, what we're doing. And I think Migration being the next kind of evolutionary step of that is it's exciting for me. I hope it's exciting for people who drink the wines.
I think you folks have done a great job, and appreciate it. Big fan of the wines, and I know you got a lot of people that are going to be waiting to say hi to you and taste what you have, and I'm real excited to see you have a little of everything out there. So that's great. Thank you very much.
That's great. Thanks, Ray. I appreciated talking with you.
You can find Migration Wine on the web at migrationwines.com.